Sometimes in life, we have experiences that will change our destinies. Whether that change is for the good or for the bad is up to us. Like so many things in life, our direction after a tragedy is a choice. Will you choose to take what has happened to you and turn it into something positive, or will you wallow in grief and pain and constantly look back at what might have been? Jennifer Gilbert, chief visionary of Save the Date, is a prime example of the first. After an earth-shattering experience, Jennifer chose to build her life up rather than let what happened to her keep her down. After only 5 years in business, Jennifer was awarded Entrepreneur of the Year and has consistently been on Working Woman's Magazine's top 500 list. And if that weren't enough, she found time to write a book, I Never Promised You a Goodie Bag, about her experience, her life, and her success. Today, we're going to share in her tragedies and triumphs to take a few lessons back to our lives that will serve us well now and into the future. Jennifer, welcome to success. So glad to have you with us here today. And I don't suppose that you brought me a goodie bag, did you?
I did not, because you know I never promised you one.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so Jennifer, to get the full picture before we delve into the details, share your story with us. Who is Jennifer Gilbert and, you know, what's her story?
Well, I'd say there's probably two parts to that. One is before writing the book, and one is sort of after. But I am a mother of three. I live in New York City. I have an event planning company called Save the Date, which will be 20 years in February, which is frightening. And I have lived a pretty interesting life the last 20 years. I do events from everybody from the Bill Gates and his foundation to Oprah. But that all sort of started after something pretty tragic happened 22 years ago. So that's sort of where this story begins.
Yeah, so tell us that, because I do want to begin there, and then I want to talk about what you've done since, but that seems to be the epicenter of where this all began, so please share that story.
After college, I went to University of Vermont, and then I moved to London for a year. After I'd been back from London for about a week, I took the train into New York City and then a subway down to visit my girlfriend. And unbeknownst to me, I was followed off the subway by a man who followed me into my friend's apartment building and stabbed me 37 times with a screwdriver and pretty much left me for dead when I was 22. So that was a pretty pinnacle point of my life.
Hmm. Was there a reason? I mean, it just seems bizarre and frightening beyond belief, but was there a reason?
No, this was a total random act of violence. This man was a paroled murderer, and I had no idea I was being followed, and it was a beautiful May day. The sun was out. It was the middle of the afternoon. And he had followed me from the subway station about four blocks to my friend's apartment building. And the doors had been propped open, and I kind of cruised in to the hallway, and he was behind me. And I rang the doorbell to my friend's apartment, and I heard a noise. And when I turned my head, I saw somebody in the hallway. And I thought, you know, this is very strange, because he was sort of casing the wall. So his body was leaning up against the wall. And there were only two apartments, the one I was standing in front of and the one directly behind me. So if he kept going, he was going to literally bang into me. And I remember I looked up at him and his head was down and his eyes were looking up. And all I could see was like hate. And I kind of like involuntarily shuddered. And I kept ringing the doorbell, like thinking to myself, hurry up, come open the door. And the next thing I knew, you know, I had all of these sort of blows in my head. And I thought he was punching me. And I thought, oh, my God. I remember thinking, I'm being mugged. And I, you know, this is my first time in New York City and I'm being mugged. I mean, you know, as like a grown up adult. And I threw my purse on the ground thinking, just, you know, just take it. And the next thing I knew, I was on the ground and I felt something going into my leg. He was punching me, but I felt something in my leg. And that's when I realized he had been stabbing me. There was a screwdriver that was tucked into his fist. So while I thought he was punching me in my head, there was actually a screwdriver in there. And my girlfriend finally came to open up the door and saw me, you know, lying in blood in the hallway, and just out of her own fear and shock, closed the door. So she closed the door on me outside in the hallway and went back into the apartment to tell her 5 roommates what had happened, and she lost her voice. So while I was fighting for my life in the hallway, she didn't have the words to say, like, somebody help Jen. And I must have seen her open up the door, because when she came back, I was on my feet. Somehow I had managed to get this man off of me. And she opened up the door, and I stood up, and I ran inside, and I kind of pushed my friend to the side, and I turned around in the apartment, and he was behind me. So he had followed me into the apartment, and he was chasing after me, and I thought, I am dead. Like, this, I was still trying to figure out what he wanted, and it continued on. He chased me onto the sofa, and it continued. So I'm definitely lucky to be alive.
I can't imagine any of our listeners having gone through anything close to what you just described there. Although I'm sure many of them have had their difficulties in life. And so I ask you this only to see if there's something that might be helpful to somebody else. What were you thinking during and after this? What were the emotions that you were struggling with? And then what helped you eventually to move past this? Because obviously you have the reason why we're having you featured in Success is because you are, in fact, this great success now. So what were you thinking and feeling at the moment, and what helped you get past it?
At the moment, I think it was just complete shock and disbelief. I mean, and shame and anger. I think I felt, you know, ashamed in some way, even though there was nothing I could have done. I mean, I didn't know, but when you're chosen and picked and followed, and, you know, someone tries to, you know, kill you in the most violent way possible, you think, what have I done in my life to deserve this? Like, why me? And you can have a pretty big pity party for yourself. And I think while maybe people haven't been through exactly what I've been through, I think everybody has a story. I think everybody has something in their life that's relative to them where they can feel that it's happened to them, where they feel victimized. I definitely felt at that point when that happened, I mean, I was 22, I had my whole life in front of me. And I thought, you know, my life is over. Like, I will never have joy. And I now am, you know, you lose your innocence. I was like, the world is not a good place. You know, what have I done to deserve this? I mean, there's so many questions of why me, why me? And then I think your life can take 2 roads. I think people can stay there and they get stuck and they get angry and they get bitter and they stay stuck. Or, you know, I think that for me, I just decided. I mean, there was one day where I just sort of woke up and I said, enough, like enough already. And I thought, if this man alters my life and takes me away from what I wanted and this fabulous life that I envisioned, then he might as well have killed me, because I need to move on and I need to get over this, because I have the rest of my life to live. And that had a lot to do with my career path and what I chose to do with my life.
I often talk about the philosophy of having and taking 100% ownership of your life, and the one of the 3 ways of which to do so is, it's, you're not responsible for what happens to you. but you are responsible for how you respond. And that's the transition that it sounds like that you made, is that you finally decided to take ownership of the response.
100%. I mean, I think the biggest lesson that I learned from all of this, and if it's to help anyone out there, you know, it's that you cannot control sometimes what happens to you. Things happen all the time. It's how you respond. It's how you control who you are afterwards that counts, and that you do have control over. You can decide who you want to be once something happens.
Beautiful example of that. So I'm curious why you decided to write a book now, when you kept the story from the public for so long. I imagine writing the story out must have been like opening up an old wound, and you had to relive it. And now, as a result of this story being so compelling and so powerful, you're having to retell it, and as part of which you are reliving it over and over again. So what made you decide to actually come out with a story, write a book, and share this publicly?
Well, after I decided that I was going to never talk about this again, because I kind of thought at that point, okay, it happened, it's done, it's over, and, you know, now what am I going to do? And I became an event planner and ultimately started Save the Date, because for me, I thought I would have no joy in my own life, and I would have to kind of get my joy by osmosis, sort of be around people celebrating and make their celebrations a reality, and that would have to just be good enough for me. So that's sort of how I started my company. And of course, P.S., 20 years later, I had a situation with my son, who now has and did develop something called alopecia, where his hair falls out, and it's fallen out completely. It happened the first time when he was a year, and then it came back, and then when he was 2 years old, it fell out, and ultimately he lost all of his hair. And he's perfectly healthy, and there's nothing wrong with him, but he now was having his before and after, because when I looked at my life, I always looked at it in terms of before the attack and after the attack, and who I was before and who I was after. And while he was so young, he didn't even understand that his hair was falling out or coming back. I was traumatized. It was like all of that old pain of why me, how could this be happening, sort of was bubbling up around his hair. And I couldn't talk about it with anybody, even though it was right in front of me and it was very visible. And one day I came home and my daughter was crying. And she said, you know, Mommy, I'm sorry I forgot to tell her friend's name, the rule. And I said, what rule? And she said, the rule that we don't talk about Gray's hair. My son's name, one of my sons is Gray. I have twins. And all of a sudden I looked at her and it was like, oh no, I'm doing this. Like, I'm making this about him, and it's not about him or his hair. This is about me. And I have to get rid of all of my stuff and all of my old anger, which I had done a good job over 20 years, like layer by layer of shedding. But the lesson, you know, like perception is reality. And the only perception my son had was the only reality he had, which was mine. So if I made this okay for him, it would be okay for him. And that is what sort of snapped me out of this. And that's when I started to like journal and write down my story, because all of a sudden it wasn't my story. It was anybody's story. I just realized like life is a series of things that happen to you, and how you let go of things and how you move forward and past them is how you move forward in your life. And it was my job as his mother to make sure that he wasn't going to have, you know, all of these emotional issues, because I still had them from 20 years ago. And that's what made me really start to write down. First, it was just sort of journaling my feelings. And then it was, okay, it's time to talk, because if I can help somebody realize that you can let go and that, you know, I couldn't control what happened to me any more than I can control one hair on my kid's head. And believe me, I tried. I went to every doctor. I mean, I'm a type A++. I'm an event planner. Like, I'm all in the details. And at some point, I just had to say, like, I don't control this, and I can't, and I can't get angry about it. I just have to let go. And I used to think that, you know, the fighting was like the answer, like my power came from the fight. And I realized that my power came from the surrender, mm-hmm. that once I could let it go, I could see how I needed to handle the situation. And that was a really big life lesson for me.
Mm. Yeah, it's one that I've learned over and over again the hard way. You know, you try to shove a square peg into a round hole, and the more you force, the worse it becomes. And letting things sort of unfold and watching and observing and responding in wisdom is a much better approach to it. I'm interested about the reactions people had to your story, particularly those who had been business clients maybe for a long period of time without ever knowing this about you. Is there one or two reactions that really stuck with you that made you stop and think and say, maybe I should have shared this with people earlier? Or were there any regrets? And then were there any inspirations that came from the way that people responded?
I mean, I think for the most part, it's all been inspirational. Sometimes I have regret of not saying it earlier, just because I realized once my book came out, how many people just identified with parts of it. And, you know, as I had said before, you know, everybody goes through something in their life. It could be health, it could be divorce, it could be weight loss. I mean, it could be, you know, anything. And I think it's just a general outlook of not getting stuck. And I think sometimes we're going around and around in circles trying to figure out why or what the answer is or why me, and being angry and being bitter. We don't realize that, like, we're wearing a circle down into the ground instead of, like, jumping out of it and realizing, like, okay, wait, there's a whole other, you know, world out there instead of the one that I'm creating in my head. And I think that once I told this story, I mean, my clients have known me for years. I mean, they were just, you know, so sad for me that I had to go through that. A lot of people sort of said, okay, it makes sense, because I fight for them all the time. And as a woman in business and a young woman who started her company at 25, I had to, you know, deal with a lot of people saying, no, you can't. This is never going to happen. You know, listen, young lady, with their kind of their finger in my face. And I would stand my ground and I would fight for my clients. I would fight for the price they wanted. I would fight for what I thought was right for my employees. And I understand what fighting is. So when I commit, you know, I'm all in. And I think that it really formed a lot of who I became. You know, some people say, I wonder if you would have been the same person if this hadn't happened. And I said, I don't know anymore, because it's such a part of the fiber of who I am that I can't pull it out of me. I know that I had this passion to celebrate life, and that when something like that happens to anyone, I think that you can either, you know, lock yourself in a silo and stay there for the rest of your life afraid, or you can realize that it's so precious, life, and that everything turns on a dime. And for me, I'm not going to have a regret. And I think that there was something inside of me that was just not going to give up.
Well, I'm glad to hear you talk about how the response was inspirational, because I think also something that people listening can learn from is that when they share their fears or their vulnerabilities or the things that have happened that have not been so positive in their life, and they're afraid to tell others, that actually it becomes a source of empowerment for others and a source of inspiration with the reactions and responses they get back from others. So I think there's something very powerful in that. Now, as a result of what you experienced, you have a mantra that is something you live by now, which is you can't move forward if you're staring in the rearview mirror. And I think I think looking back is a habit that so many people have, and this idea of what could have been. So tell us how you actively look forward, and what is something that you could suggest that people do that to get over the idea of looking back and consistently look forward.
I think that fear is just a huge component of you know, people's experiences. And while it's justified or not, I mean, people have all their own different rules of what they're scared of. I think it's a totally a paralyzing emotion. And I always say there's no good action that comes out of fear. I think, you know, sometimes your body's telling you something that you need to listen to, but listen and then act, because a lot of it is self-created. A lot of it is just your mind telling you what you cannot do. And I think I sort of flip the paradigm of that and think, okay, let's just pretend it's all going to be fine. Like if at the end of my life, or at the end of this month, or at the end of this business venture, whatever it is, if it all worked out, then yay, great. And why shouldn't I spend that time assuming it's going to all be okay, when ultimately there's only so much you can have control over? I can have control over my own actions. So if I act, you know, with good intentions, and if I act according to my beliefs, well, then why shouldn't things go right? And fear is just going to get in my way. So I literally have to sit and breathe, because sometimes literally just sitting down and taking a deep breath and just kind of like getting centered and saying, what am I afraid of? Let me think about what it is. Am I scared of failure? Am I scared that, you know, someone's going to hurt me? I mean, these things have happened to me, so I have a funny relationship with fear. But I think that if you don't try, if I don't try, I will live my life looking in the rearview mirror. I will live my life behind me. And that is no way to go forward. So I just look forward. And doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. Doesn't mean I haven't learned from things. But I tried it. And at the end of my life, at the end of my day, I need to know that I have tried, and I'm not taking, you know, the safe way out because I'm scared. So learn your lesson, you know, have a 2-minute pity party, because sometimes people deserve it, then get over it. Like, get over it and look forward.
So speaking of looking forward, I would like to talk a bit about your business success. Save the Date was quite successful in a rather short period of time, and we know that your tragedy made you throw yourself into your work, but what are one or two other things that you would say contributed to your success in making that company so successful?
Well, I think definitely in the beginning, work was the biggest distraction. I mean, Save the Date, like, I think just thinking it through, and we were successful because I had flipped the business model and kind of came up with a new way of doing business. But I think also really winning that award, I think in a way made me realize, like, wait a minute. You know, I have a business here. Like, I think at that point that I won the award, I had maybe $8, $9 million in sales. I had 5 people working for me. My business was maybe 4 or 5 years old. And I think I was just running at full force thinking, this is just me with a bunch of, you know, helpers. And I realized, you know, it's not just me anymore. And we're building something here. And I think that once I sort of stopped and thought, okay, well, who am I as a leader? And I took classes. I went into a program called the Birthing of Giants up at MIT. I really had to learn how to be a manager and how to learn how to run a business. And I, you know, sat down with my employees. They were probably the only people that I had told my story to, because I needed them to understand who I was and why I was so committed to every party that I planned and every client that we had. I think that that sort of helped, all of that helped me become a better leader. I think that I found mentors and now I mentor. I think that's such an important part of the process. Like, you know, I don't know what I don't know. And I admit that. And I think, you know, I outsource everything but my soul. So if I don't do it really, really, really well, I want the person who does it better than me. And so I have really learned to give up a lot of the control that entrepreneurs sort of have in the beginning where they think, like, I can do better, everything better than everyone else. I realized, like, these are the qualities that I'm good at, and I'm going to find people that are better than me at the things that I'm not as good at. And I think that realization helped me grow, and it helped my business grow. And, you know, we opened up other offices in other cities, and then we grew even more. So I think that definitely helped. I think really talking to my customers and talking to my clients and always, you know, asking the questions, how can we do it better? What can we do that's better? What do you need? You know, I always laugh and think, if I need it and you need it and she needs it, there's a business in it. So I think, you know, being open to just asking the questions.
So I can't think of a more difficult market or more competitive market than New York City, the Big Apple. And then inside the Big Apple, event planning has got to be one of the toughest, most competitive marketplaces that one can enter. So explain what you did to set your particular business apart. I mean, certainly to the point where you earn Entrepreneur of the Year. What was your differentiator so that we can translate that to others that might be listening that are also in difficult and competitive marketplaces and need to differentiate their business?
Definitely. You know, I look back and I think it was so obvious to me, but it really changed the game in New York. So when I first started working in New York City as an event planner, I worked for a company that was a very small event planning company, and most of the companies that were around were wedding planners. And while that is wonderful and great, and my company does do weddings, we really do corporate and nonprofit. So my boss had hired me to build this market. And he said, you know, how do you feel about cold calling? I'm like, love it. Give me the phone book. Well, I had never done a cold call in my life. I had never planned an event in my life. I had no idea what I was doing, and I didn't know New York. But okay, so fine. All of those, check, check, check. So he gives me, literally gives me like the yellow pages, and he's like, go to it. And I said, okay. So I sat down and I thought, okay, who needs to entertain and who spends money? Now, this is in the 90s. So I'm calling all these big, you know, investment banks and law firms, and they're like, oh, honey, you just missed the 80s. And I said, yeah, shame. Like, I had, you know, everybody was in the recession, Reagan was over. And what I kept hearing over and over from these corporations was, God, we would love to hire you. We are so busy, we can't even get out of the office. And they've just fired half of my division, but we can't afford to pay you. And on the other side, I kept hearing all of these venues and spaces and ballrooms who had just renovated, and all of a sudden the economy crashed. So they had all of these beautiful spaces and they had to fire their salespeople. So they kept calling me and saying, Jennifer, bring me a party and I'll give you, you know, I'll give your client another hour of open bar, I'll upgrade their menu. And I was like, wait a minute. They need spaces, they need business. So I went back to the corporations and I said, what happens if I could find you the exact space that would work for your conference or your product launch or your party, and I was free to you? Would you use me? And they said, yeah, of course. Then I went back to the spaces and I said, if I brought you the exact population that would fit in your space at the price that you need for the number of people, like, what's that worth to you? And they said, well, a lot. It's something we wouldn't have. And so I was like, aha, there's a business in this. So I left and I flipped the business model. So I was paid and retained by the spaces to sort of be a location and marketing service. So I cold called the companies and said, I'm going to help you find a space for your party. And I'm paid by the spaces. So first it was 60, then it was 100. By like my fourth month, I had hundreds of spaces in New York calling me saying, how do I get on your list? I was like, let me think about that. You know, and all of a sudden we just exploded. And like any good salesperson, I had built in bonuses and people were outsourcing their entire sales department to my company. So we had all these exclusive spaces and we just changed, like literally we changed the industry. And so back then I thought I was just like solving a problem that needed a solution. And I had revolutionized my industry by becoming a free service. So that's really how my company started. And I think the award was just the innovation of really looking and asking the questions and saying, well, why can't I work with this person? And, you know, for me, I never like the word no. So I'm always looking for the yes. So I thought, well, how do I get them to use me? And then I just found a need, and that was how we started. And, you know, that was sort of the first kind of differentiator in my business, in my industry.
Yeah, so the two key points there is asking questions, you know, why is this the way it is? And then matching needs is what you did there. And so, yeah, it seems obvious, but it's always the obvious things that people miss that could be the big breakthroughs. So Jennifer, before we end our very riveting conversation together, I have just one last question for you. Of all the lessons that you've learned through your traumatizing experience, as well as your successful business, share with us one thing that you would want people to take away from your story. What's one lesson that changed you and could change all of us for the better as we move forward and end this interview?
I think that every day you have a choice to be better. You have a choice to be happier, to love more, to laugh more, to be a better person, to be a better businesswoman, to be a better businessman. If you are stuck in your own way and you kind of know you're there, you can decide, like, okay, enough. I'm sick of being angry, or I'm sick of being upset, or I have to get over the fact that I made a bad business decision and move on. And every day is a new day. And that isn't a really important, even like for people that are on a diet, like they had a really bad day, they ate too much ice cream. I say, okay, tomorrow's a new day. Like, take a deep breath and don't eat it tomorrow. I think people live in this permanence and they don't have to. You know, they can really decide in their mind, which they have control of, to turn things around. And that is so powerful. It's the easiest and the hardest paradigm shift to get to. But once you realize that you really do have control over how you behave, then you can do whatever you want because it comes from you. And I think that's, without sounding all existential, it's really powerful.
Well, Jennifer Gilbert, thank you so much for having the courage, the openness, and the character to share your story of both trauma and triumph with us. Really enjoyed being with you. Thanks so much for being with us here at Success.
Thank you so much, Darren. I'm really, really honored. Thank you.